Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to The Bigger Picture, a break from the news, a pleasant break from the news, with my excellent co-host, Michael Rakia. If you're not familiar with his work, please get over to josephspeaks.com, and I suggest buying all the books there. Okay, how's that, Michael? Good morning.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you so much, Maria, and great to be back with you again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Listen, I've been recommending your books to so many people, and they all tell me they start with Your Life After Death, and once they read that, they say they go in and buy all the books.
Yes.
So, I'm very happy that people are finding real, clean, spiritual truth.
Thank you.
And you are getting known around the world, surprising as that may be to you. But I had a client in Australia who said that when he heard our show together, he had to check out your work, and he bought all your books.
Yes, I believe so. Yes, that's very gratifying.
And, there are people that actually want that information, so I'm happy to put it out there.
Thank you so much, Maria.
My pleasure. Thank you, because I know what personal cost it is to do that kind of work.
Well, we're lining up for another book next year, so, we need people's good wishes as well. We'll be sitting monthly to bring through a seventh book. You never say never with Joseph, You always think it's the last book, but then he pushes a little bit and pushes a little bit more until you find that you've got to do another one.
Well, it makes sense to me. The world keeps changing. People still keep asking questions. It seems the worse it gets, the more spiritually aware people are getting with what's going on.
Yes, indeed.
So
yes,
that makes sense. Michael, I do want to start the show. I have a question from Patricia.
Okay.
She said, there are a lot of people now who are interested in their family ancestry, going back generations to see where they came from, their family tree. But she says, because of reincarnation and the fact in a past life we were probably in a completely different place with different people, does it make sense to care about our family history?
Yeah, excellent question, Patricia. Thank you for asking that. Yes, there are two ways of looking at family. There's the apparent family that we have, and within that apparent family, there can be members that we have known from past lives. And then there's our spiritual family, our greater family, our soul group family. And sometimes the connections that we make through family on earth are not, this is going to sound harsh, as important as we think they are. And sometimes it is more important, they are more important, those links, than we think we are. It's all down to the fact that we have our true personality masked and forgotten and hidden within us. And if we could see who we truly were and how we had lived before, we would instantly connect on earth with those people who are from our true spiritual family. Now, that is not to put down the importance of family here and the importance of the love bonds that we make. Because if we love someone, that bond is eternal. What I'm saying is that there are family members on a soul group level that are closer to us than the people may be on an earthly family level. But also, within that earthly family, there may be souls that we have reincarnated with before. And not always in the same positions. They might have been a mother in one life, or a brother in another life, or a sibling in another life, a daughter, a son. We don't always incarnate with the same sex. and we don't always incarnate with the same relationships to the other souls that are around us from our soul group family. It depends on why we have decided to come back and what we have decided to learn. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. You know, she also says, and it's a good point, she said, you know, these ancestries are just really part of this particular physical body. She says, since
yes,
we all
absolutely.
Have histories and families in different parts of the world from past lives, she says, during a war, could we be fighting and killing off our own ancestors?
Absolutely. We can be fighting. We never know who the person we are talking to really is. And that gets back to a greater question. Should we judge? And we shouldn't judge based on appearances. We should evaluate based on spiritual appearances, based purely on, do the people that are around us harmonize with us? If they don't harmonize with us, and we know that instantly when we meet someone, don't we? You know, you shake hands with someone, you're introduced to someone, and there is a subconscious reaction to that. Either we instantly like this person, or we instantly think there is something about this person that we dislike. Now, if you substitute for like and dislike, harmony and disharmony, then we make the right choices in approaching the people around us. We should always go with that connection feeling that we have. And if we feel we're in harmony with someone, then we should promote that harmony. If we're in disharmony with someone, then we should move on. Not because we're being cruel, but because we would affect their lives adversely, and they would affect ours adversely. And that's not to say that we don't send light and love to them. We just make the decision that at this particular stage in our existence, that person is someone that we can share something with, or someone that we prefer not to share someone with. But yes, it is possible that we are fighting people that we have known before. And we have to look at the, not just people, but the whole world, the whole universe, as a holistic experience. That we are all part of the same thing. So if I harm you, I'm harming myself. If I harm the worm that I tread on, I am harming myself, because that both of those are expressions of me and expressions of the whole and expressions of the universe. We can't disentangle ourselves from things, and we try to do it all the time. And this is why we perpetuate wars, because we are fighting ourselves all the time and becoming upset with the disharmony that that causes, instead of seeking harmony, seeking balance, and acknowledging that everything is part of everything else, and therefore is of equal importance to us, and of equal importance to each other, and of equal importance to God.
Mm-hmm. Well said. You know, here we are in the middle of the holidays, and I see on social media, especially around Thanksgiving, everybody dreading to get together with their families. And here you go again with, you know, Christmas and the other holidays coming up. And it'll be a repeat of the same thing. And people always ask me, you know, why that is. And my answer is always the same. I say, just because they're related to you doesn't mean they're your family.
Yes, yes. Blood is not necessarily thicker than water.
Right.
But in those family situations, what happens, of course, is that everybody has a different viewpoint. And everybody tries to protect their own corner at these gatherings. So there's, you know, the aunt you dread or the uncle you don't talk to, and they're all crammed into the same room. Whereas if they let go for the duration of the festivities of their personal viewpoint and said there is no personal viewpoint, there's just us, they would be surprised at how well they got on with each other. And I think that leads into a very important point at this time of year, which is the point of forgiveness and letting go. Letting go. You know, you've got people gathered together around the Christmas dinner, and they will be nursing things that have happened to them, between themselves, years ago, decades ago, and bringing up those same old emotions that have the same vibrational power as they had when they first happened. So all that is brought to the dinner table in the name of love and harmony.
All right.
So, we have to learn to let go. I know it's difficult, but it also makes us healthier. It makes us clearer in mind, clearer in spirit, and able to move on into the new experiences that are so essential for our spiritual evolution. So we would have far more harmonious family gatherings this Christmas and any holiday if we let go. If we said, this is now, that was then.
Right.
And we are here to celebrate the fact that there was a message 2,000 years ago to say that we should love each other.
Right.
Not that we should go to Toys R Us or wherever else and give somebody something in a box and think that that's loving each other. We are here to love each other. We are here to turn the other cheek. We are here to harmonize. And that, of course, is the true meaning of Christmas. Not the department stores, not the bling and the jewelry, but to get on with each other, to recognize the self in each other, to recognize the God in each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember, it was probably several Christmases ago when you were on the show, you said something that stuck with me. You said, you know, people are celebrating Christmas, but they celebrate the messenger, but they never got the message.
Yes, indeed.
So
they worship the messenger.
Well, I don't know. Today it seems everybody's fighting over what color Jesus was. That's the new thing.
Oh, my goodness.
So somebody got very upset over a Santa Claus in a mall that was black. So somebody said, what would they do if we tell them that Jesus wasn't white?
Yes, indeed.
But it's amazing how much division there is out there. And you know, to me, it just looks like the time is speeding up. So my own question, you know, for Joseph is, how much closer have we moved on the timeline towards the end of this system?
Well, I can only say that a few months ago, I sensed over the period of a week that things had taken a step downwards. But I always say that if things take a step downwards, and you can sense it in the speeding up that you've just talked about, that we then need to work harder, and that each of these steps is an alarm call. It's a wake-up call to say, we still have time. We still have today. Please God, we still have tomorrow. Let us make the most of today and tomorrow, and recognize that we are able to change things if we will put in the time. We put in time into so many strange things. We'll put time into the shopping, time into the Christmas dinner, time into watching TV, time into the athletics, time into speeding around in fast cars, but we will not take the time for 10 minutes, quarter of an hour in the morning, same at night, to put light into situations. Our priorities are wrong. Our priority should be to restore harmony to each other and to this planet before, as you say, it's too late. It isn't too late. To everybody listening, it's not yet too late. But we have set ourselves on a course with disaster if we don't take personal responsibility and if we don't change. And nobody's going to do it for us. For each person listening and for each person around the world, they have to do it for themselves. It's a huge gift. It's the gift of total freedom and free will. We do it for ourselves, but we are a society that relies on others. You know, make me better.
Right.
Sort out my finances. Sort out my house. Sort out my situation. Sort out my mental state. We have to at some stage say, it's a gift to be able to be strong enough to do these things for ourselves. And we should be, as much as we can. Nobody's saying that we can't rely on others. We're supposed to rely on others. And we've got the advice of others, thank God. But ultimately, we have to make the decisions. And the most important and enlightened decision, literally, we can make at this time of year, is to say, yes, I am going to send out the light. And I'm going to send it out without prejudice. I'm going to send it out because I recognize that everyone I meet and all those people I haven't met and will never meet during this lifetime are part of me and part of God. And if they are thinking in a violent way, if they're thinking in a way that is against me and against nature and against the planet, then the light that I send out will help them to see sense. I've got to send out enough light so that there is not darkness around them, but light around them so that they can look around one morning and think, oops, I've got it wrong. Now I can get it right. Now I'm working for the light too.
Well said. You know, in your last book, From Here to Infinity, you say something very interesting that most people will not say. You say you don't ingest light, you transmit light.
Yes.
I know a lot of people that sit, you know, sit for hours in meditation trying to get enlightened, you know, bring the light in. Is it that a fallacy? Is it that they're actually sending light out?
The light actually exists within us, as all truth and all spiritual knowledge actually exists within us. That the messages in the Joseph books are not new, they are things that we have forgotten. As Joseph is the first to say, I'm helping you, he says, to remember who you are. And the true personality that we have, the spiritual personality, resides within ourselves, within our heart chamber, within the heart center. And at the heart center, there is, it's like going into a well. It's like putting a bucket into a well and finding that no matter how many times we pull this bucket up, it is always filled with the most brilliant, white, loving, harmonious light. And that's why we need the quiet, because we cannot draw light in from this world. This world is in the grip of the field of human consciousness, and the field of human consciousness is set to negative. It's in the interest of the field of human consciousness to keep us disturbed, to keep us unhealthy, to keep us aging, to keep us at each other's throats. And we have to go within to get beyond. It's a strange thing to say, but by going within to our God center, our heart center, we reach beyond the energies, the polluted energies of the field of human consciousness, and from outside of, if you like, but within us, the field of human consciousness, there exists God light, angelic light. And we then transmit that out from our heart centers, through our imaginations, into the areas of the world that we feel need the most change. So the light comes from inside, as illumination in our personal lives, in our spiritual lives, in our physical lives, comes from within. Our intuition is not outside of ourselves. It's within ourselves. Our guidance is not outside of ourselves, it's within ourselves. So we need to become quiet and to reach in, and there we find everything that we need to change this world and to help ourselves through life.
Exactly. And you know, that's what I tell people. Your greatest teacher for yourself is tuning into your intuition.
Absolutely.
Instead of looking outside yourselves, like you said earlier, you know, fix me, you know, do this for me, do that for me. But you know what? I think that, you know, religions have had a big part in making people dependent that way. You know, come
Absolutely.
To us, give us money, we'll pray for you.
Yes.
You know, and I remember my dad used to be a Roman Catholic. And at that time, all the masses were in Latin, as if the people didn't have the right to hear them. And my father couldn't understand how they were really not asked or allowed pretty much to even read the Bible themselves. They always had to have an in-between.
That's right.
And I think that made people dependent, you know, whether on their priests, their rabbis, their imam, whatever, instead of saying, you know what, why don't I try to find my way to the spirit realm by myself?
That's right. I was an altar boy in the Roman Catholic Church.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And at that time, the masses were in Latin.
Right.
And you repeated them parrot fashion and didn't have an earthly idea of what things really meant. And there was an old priest at that time who had become a priest late in life. He'd been an engineer during his earlier life. And he was quite a curmudgeonly character, but was always very nice with me and indeed wanted me to become a priest. And he died, of course. He was getting on in years when I knew him. But when I started working as a medium, one Sunday morning I was sitting with my uncle and my mother. My uncle needed some healing. And he came through. And he came through in a terrible state. He came through in his priestly vestments and he was shaking. And I said, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong, Father? Why are you like this? And he said, don't make the mistake I did. I was wrong. I was wrong about it all. Please don't make the mistake I did. And then he went. And so there you have it from a priest's mouth.
Well, there you have it. It's right. You know, it's interesting because in his later years, my father, as you know, became a Jehovah's Witness.
Yes.
And, you know, even when he was dying, he thought that God had forsaken him because they promised him that anybody born after 1914 would never know death. So he felt like God had abandoned him. And, you know, through the years, I tried to talk to him about my views on spirituality, Native American spirituality. And he really, you know, he kind of poo-pooed it. But just like you had that experience, I had a similar experience because after my father died, he did come through to me. And he said to me the same thing pretty much. He says, I apologize. You were right and I was wrong. And I was like, well, it doesn't matter who was right or wrong. You know where you are now.
Yes.
You know, sometimes your parallels frighten me, Michael.
Sorry?
I said, sometimes our parallels frighten me.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I'm like, yes. Who are you? Are you me having a more peaceful existence? And from here to infinity, you talk about so many interesting things. And one of the things I really loved was you talk about our lives as a film, a motion picture.
Yes.
And how we have the ability to alter not only our film, but our walk-on roles in other people's films that are happening.
Yes.
How does that happen? Can we find ourselves mixed up in somebody else's film when we're not even supposed to be there and we think we're a starring role when we're not even a cameo?
Well, the first thing we have to realize individually and as billions of people around this earth is that we are... Sorry, Maria, we've got disturbance from the front door.
That's okay.
Have to go away, whoever it is. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yes, we have to realize individually and as billions of people around this earth that we are in a play. We are in a play. We are... sorry about this.
That's okay.
Would you excuse me a moment?
Sure, go right ahead. All right, we're going to take a short break and I'll be right back.
Spiritual professor is a name some of Maria's students and clients refer to her as. After a consultation or class with Maria, some have gone as far as calling her the Force or the Oracle. Maria is simply a woman, a mother, and grandmother who was born with a keen natural intuition. She's got a lot of life experience and she's a constant student herself. This is what qualifies her to help those who are on their journey and need some direction. Some students visit her in person, others on the phone or on Skype. Maria will work with you on your own timeline, guiding you down your best possible path. You can learn to balance the mind, body, and spirit in what seems to be a world gone mad. As David Icke says about Maria, Maria's the real deal, extremely intuitive but with her feet firmly on the ground, out there, but down here, no bullshit. Whatever you need in this part of your journey is what Maria will help you with. She'll give you the tools you need to make the rest of your life the best of your life. See private consultations with Maria on the site at meria.net and pick the one that resonates with you. You are not alone. The professor is in at meria.net. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to The Bigger Picture with myself and Michael Rakia. Check out his work at josephspeaks.com. Before the break, we were talking about life as a film and how we can affect other people's films. And you said that it's more like an act. You know, it makes me think of that, you know, all of life is a stage and we each play our part.
Yes, yes. As we've talked about many times in our shows, the problem is that we've become stuck in the play. Instead of being partial observers and partial people who are involved in the play, we have become just involved in the play and believe the play to be all. We could... Sorry, Maria's just kind of throwing me a little bit. Let me compose myself. I'm terribly sorry about this.
No, that's okay. We got disturbances.
I'm glad we can edit. Thank God for editing.
I never edit my shows. I like them just the way they come out. But just, you know, in your book you say your life is a projection, and that's the
yes,
chapter.
Indeed.
You know, you alter everyone's day simply by being a presence in that day within that story.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Particularly if you are, as we talked about earlier, projecting the light. You change people on a subconscious level by creating around them the circumstances within which they can grow. And people grow within the light, not within the dark. And so you can be sitting in a meeting and projecting the light. You can be sitting on a bus and projecting a light. And you can, if an argument erupts, for example, at a bus stop or in a bank or wherever, instead of being the usual observer that enjoys the argument and says, go on, that's great, what are you going to say next? Mm. Instead, you become quiet and you ask that God bless the people who are involved in the argument and project the light out to them, and you will see the argument fall apart. You will see it stop, and they'll wonder what they were arguing about. So you can affect the play. You affect the play by your spiritual knowledge and attitude, and also by understanding that it is a play. Mm-hmm. And further than that, understanding that as a player in the play, there is only part of you in the play. Your greater self is still in the spiritual realms. Your greater self is observing the play and observing you being a player in the play, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. It kind of reminds me of those old movies where you would see the Greek gods looking down on Earth as if we were a show and
yes.
watching their players, you know, as it was happening on Earth. So, yeah, it's easy to visualize what you're talking about.
And we actually came here to both observe and participate in the play, but originally in full knowledge of being an observer and a participator in the play. We've lost that knowledge. We came here, the Earth exists, originally existed and still exists at its core, as a kind of playground, as an advanced spiritual playground through which the angelic beings that we truly are, could journey in order to add to their experience and take that experience back to the rest of the angelic host and to the Godhead. And we've forgotten all that. We're just at the point where we see ourselves in the play and don't even recognize that it's a play.
Right.
Everything around us, our lives, the way that we react to people, the circumstances of our lives, even the actual physical aspects of the world are malleable. They can be changed. They can be infused with light. They can be replaced if they're not what we want from the world. We can sweep away that which is not wanted and replace it with the light and better ways to experience. But we have to understand, first of all, that it's a play. I remember, and I must have mentioned this before, but I remember coming back from a high meditation with my spiritual teacher, in which I'd been taken to one of the spiritual levels to observe life as part of a group soul on that level. Mm-hmm. And when I came back to Earth, as it were, when I came back into my body, for about 3 weeks afterwards, I expected to be able to go around the back of a room and see the struts that you see in a film studio. Everything felt so false, so fake, until my vibration finally slowed enough mm-hmm. for me to become immersed in the illusion again.
Right.
So we might not be able to go around the back of a wall and see those supporting buttresses that you see in film and television studios, but really that's what's going on with everything that we see. With our houses, with our cities, right. even with the very structure of the planet, it is a projection of our group angelic hearts that we created originally to move through in order that we could evolve and celebrate being a part of our God and bring back the experience to our God. But we're trapped in it. We've folded ourselves in the play and we keep repeating the same play. I mean, how boring is that to switch on the TV every night and see the same play?
Right. Exactly.
There are millions of other plays available to us. We just have to choose them.
Right. Well, it just seems like a lot of people are just stuck. They're just stuck in the matrix, you know. And then you have a lot of people who like things the way they are.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Our lower instincts connect us to chaos, and we become, I don't want to say servants, but we become, we amplify the desires of the field of human consciousness. The field wants to maintain the status quo on Earth set to negative. Therefore, it's in the interest of the field to keep each of us in thrall of chaos, in thrall of violence, in thrall of disruption. You only have to look at the way that people respond on the internet to anything, anything at all. And the bile and the violence and the hatred that comes out, to see that these people are in thrall of the field of human consciousness. We have to recognize that in ourselves. None of us is perfect. We're all works in progress. But we have to be strong enough to look at those aspects of ourselves and say, today I'm going to do things differently. I'm not going to enjoy the chaos. I'm going to look for the light, and I'm going to work to inject the light to stop the chaos getting through.
Right. Well, you call it in the book, I would assume, dreaming reality.
Yes.
So what we really have to do is change the dream.
Absolutely. And it is as simple and as difficult as that. It's simple because all we have to do is see the dream that we want to take its place, infuse that with light, and send it out into the world. It's difficult because we don't believe we can do that.
Right.
And yet, each day, we dream our own worlds. If we go to bed in ill health tonight, we dream that ill health into being tomorrow. We expect it. And so, it's there waiting for us. If we have problems, you know, personal problems or financial problems, we expect them the following day. And so we put into the ether that expectation that draws towards us like vibrations and maintains the situation until we seek to change it. So we're dreaming effectively and perfectly, as Joseph says, right now. We're just dreaming the wrong dream. We have to be bold enough and brave enough to dream a different dream, and to set up different circumstances for ourselves and for everyone else across the world.
Right. Well, you know, you also talk about, in this book, and of course in your life after death, the ultimate destination. You know, a lot of people have different ideas of where and where they're going after this lifetime. But what's the ultimate destination? What's the ultimate goal?
The ultimate goal is to move through the spiritual spheres, which are regarded by many religions as heaven, singular, but are actually heavens, plural, multiple, and to divest ourselves of the effects of having been trapped in the effects of the fall, and go through, as Joseph calls it as an analogy, a trap the door that leads to infinity. Now, what's on the other side? What's on the other side is reunion. Reunion with our angelic family. We've talked about family as a theme this evening.
Right.
Reunion with our angelic family. Reunion with our ability to create worlds, to create universes, to create planets and scenarios which we then pass through in full knowledge of them being constructs, so that we can advance ourselves as angelic beings and bring fresh experiences to the Godhead. God is expanding. God isn't static. God moves on. And we came here as part of that angelic host from infinity to experience the earth plane. But unfortunately, we trapped ourselves in the effects of the fall, and we can't get out. We bring ourselves back time after time after time. Unless we are enlightened enough to, on the point of physical death, find ourselves in a situation where we can advance through the spiritual spheres. And each spiritual sphere cleanses us of the effects of having been in the fall to the point where we regain our full angelic identity. So what lies ahead for us is infinity. But it ain't going to be any time soon, relatively speaking.
Right.
There are wonderful heavens ahead for us and wonderful learning situations that we go through in order to reach infinity. So there are blissful landscapes and blissful horizons ahead of us, but eventually they lead to that escape from the nested spheres of spirituality and spiritual evolution around and through this earth into the state of mind and being that we had before we came here so long ago and got trapped in that cycle of, through free will, keep coming back, reincarnating and reincarnating and reincarnating, because we've been drawn in by those aspects of this distorted illusion that we find attractive. And also because we've lost our view of there being anything other than this world. And so we many of us, move on to the next world, not having prepared for it in any way, not having sought it out, not having investigated it, and in many cases, not believing in it. And so through free will, we then, through choice, decide that we'd like to come back here. There's so much beauty and so much purpose and so many experiences ahead of us in the spirit realms that lead to infinity, and yet we turn our back on them time and again to come back here. So, time to get off.
Right. Never come back. Never come back. You know, there was an old movie with Meryl Streep and, God, I can't remember the comedian's name. I think it was Richard Brooks. It was something for your life. I don't, you know, recall it offhand right now. But it was very clear in what you just said. It's a good visual because, you know, it's really a roundup of people once they've crossed over. Depending on what they did in their lives, they get to see some of their past lives. Depends on what bus they get on to where they're going next.
Yes.
And it was an adorable movie, and I thought there was a lot of spiritual truth in it, even for a comedy.
Yes.
And, of course, it goes back to your life after death. You know, one of the scenes in that book that stuck out to me was where you describe if you were a couch potato all your life, you might wake up in a room full of other couch potatoes and be there for a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can watch whatever you want on that TV that you will conjure up on that side until you decide that it's time to do something else. We waste a lot of time steeped in the illusion that we take over with us. Until we decide to be something different, we are what we are. We are what we are today until we make something different of what we are today, and then we become something different that has new experiences. So we have to be open to the possibilities and the instruction that is there if we seek it once we pass from this physical life. There are people there dying, forgive the pun, but dying to help us.
Right.
Who would do anything to help us out of the muddle of the illusion that we sometimes place ourselves in. So we have to be receptive to those workers for the light that are around who can advise us as to what to do next and how to think next if we choose, and again it's free will, if we choose to move forwards into the spiritual realms and ultimately through that trapdoor into infinity.
Well, I can totally get that for sure, but, you know, people worry and wonder, well, what happens to my individuality? I don't want to be part of a mass blob. Am I going to lose myself once that happens?
Well, let me let the listeners into a secret. You are part of that mass blob right now, and yet you are individual. Now mass blob is not the right term I should be using. But you are a part of the whole now. You were given individuality from the Godhead in order that you could bring back to the Godhead your individual viewpoint to enrich the Godhead. Now, your individual viewpoint becomes, there's a strange concept here, becomes more individual the further that you go on into the spirit realms. And yet, you seek out and harmonize with and become closer to the people around you.
Uh-huh.
You are able to operate on two levels. You can operate on the level of the individual, and you can also operate on the level of the group soul. So you are experiencing those two aspects of yourself at the same time. We can multitask as spiritual people, as spiritual beings, and we don't find it strange. So there is great joy in experiencing and sharing the lives of others, in listening to their experiences, in viewing their viewpoints. But at the same time, there is great, wonderful joy in becoming closer to people in your group soul, and having a unified task that you have decided on to investigate and contribute to during your time as part of that group soul. And group souls are also moving closer to other group souls. Mm-hmm. So there is a constant harmony. And I would also say to the listeners, imagine each of you must at some times in your life be lonely. You know, you'll close your own front door and there's nobody there.
Right.
And you sit there and watch the telly and try and amuse yourself, but you feel lonely. Imagine never having to feel lonely again. Because that love that you feel and get and give to and from your closest relations and the people around you is there multiplied by millions and always available from the people in your group soul who are so like you in purpose that you can't help but love them and they love you.
Right.
So it's not absorption into a group blob. It is a greater definition of spiritual self, but also the wonderful sense of harmony that comes from existing as part of a community that has a total unification of purpose and celebrates itself and loves creation.
Well, it sounds like, you know, being able to spend time with your best friends that doesn't end.
Absolutely. That's absolutely it.
All right. But I did recall, and actually I cheated. I looked up the name of that movie, and it's called Defending Your Life. And it was made in 1991, and it's with Meryl Streep and Albert Brooks. And I highly recommend it. Michael, if you haven't seen it, you're going to enjoy every second of it.
Defending Your Life.
Defending Your Life.
Okay,
I'm sure you can rent it on Netflix or anywhere else. I don't know what's available to you. You know, another question that you answer in a very different way than most people is about energy. What is energy? Because a lot of people say energy is and cannot be destroyed. A lot of people, you know, energy is, you know, having a bowl of oatmeal in the morning. But that's a different take than what Joseph says. So what is energy?
Well, we have to, again, understand that in our total spiritual form, we exist as part of the no thing, which goes back to me saying that we create scenarios for ourselves to move through. We have to react against something. And so at our spiritual core, at our God core, there are no physical things. We have to move a little bit away from the God core in order to express ourselves. And so we push against light, and our reaction against light by pushing against it creates energy. But we are not energy. We need energy to recognize each other and to recognize the earth and to recognize the universe. But we are not energy. Energy is a tool. Energy is an interplay of desires, and energy is literally thought given form.
Mm-hmm.
So we think ourselves a scenario around ourselves that we then move through. And that is what we call energy. And the light that we send out is a manipulation of the energy fields around us. But in meditation, isn't it true that in meditation we can have all sorts of things going wrong and chaos in our lives, and we are suddenly outside of that? We descend to the heart center in thought, and we're outside and are protected from and away from all those things around us because we have withdrawn from that energy. We also have to be careful not to put, and this is a theme that we've had this evening again, we have to be careful not to add to the energy that already exists on this physical level. If we see a chaotic state of energy, we have to be careful not to say, yes, that is chaotic, and oh dear, how terrible. Instead, we have to say, well, yes, there's a chaotic state of energy there, but I can counter that, and I can infiltrate that, and I can change that by putting in light energy, and then sending, transmitting along that light energy, my wishes in conjunction with my God for a better state of affairs for mankind. So energy is one of our tools. that allows us to recognize the physical world around us. But it isn't us. It is a wavelength. It is an ability to transmit our beliefs and desires into form.
Right. So, you know, that reminds me, years ago, and I'm sure you were familiar with it, the big craze was that movie, The Secret, and the books, The Secret.
That's
where
where
their teaching was all about, you know, if you desire something, just visualize it and it's going to happen. But what they never said, which was interesting to me, is you can think all you want, but until you put some energy behind it, nothing's going to happen.
Yes, there has to be volition with it, and it has to come from the right place as well. And simply thinking from the head mind doesn't accomplish the brave new world that you want to create, because linked in with your head mind thoughts are your everyday thoughts that this can't be. That you can't change things, that you don't have the ability to change things, that the rest of the world will put down your brave new thinking because it's stronger than you. Mm-hmm. The energy and the volition has to come from the heart. We have to change our thinking from the head mind to the heart mind. But then with the heart mind, you find that you might think initially, oh gosh, I need a new car, or I need a new apartment, and it's okay to have those things. But you will then find that you move on from that. And the apartment and the car don't seem so important as you continue to send out your light energy. And what's important is that we all get home. What's important is that we all recognize who we truly are. And what's important is that we recognize that we're part of God and that we can change this planet. So, you know, when you go on this journey of trying to change things and maybe start off personally with personal things, you'll find that's not where you end up. And that's great. That's great to expand your vision beyond the personal and beyond the small and beyond the trivial.
Right.
And that'd be a great gift to give to everybody these holidays, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. You know, you also talk about resonance and vibration. And I know that a lot of times, you know, I'll ask people, not just ask them, you know, do you resonate with what I just said?
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, to see people's reactions. But isn't that also a good way to judge your own soul group by your resonance and their vibration, how you feel around them?
Absolutely. As we were saying earlier, you know when someone is on your path and you are on theirs, and you know when someone is going to be a hindrance to that path and you to theirs. And it doesn't mean that you are disliking them. It simply means that you are not of a similar vibration at that point in your life. So we need to feel more rather than think. Feel situations. And when we feel situations and we connect to the God within in feeling situations, then we put the right energies into them, we put the right vibration into them, and we get the right results for all concerned out of them. It's that we have to unthink and unlearn from the head mind and move that seat of intelligence to the heart mind in order to be more effective as the spiritual beings that we really are. We have to go to our center and forget this lizard reptile brain that we've got that wants always to survive, that wants always power, that wants always to be secure. We don't need these things. We need to think from the heart and think holistically and think for the whole. You know, if I improve your lot, I improve my own lot automatically because we're all linked.
Mm.
So we have to consider others and we have to consider what we would want in an ideal world, and we have to go for it from the heart center daily to send out the right vibration to create that world.
Right. Well, you know, another way you write in the book about that is that everything you do personally to change yourself and whatever you teach or share with someone else has kind of a domino effect, because they'll repeat it too, and that's how you change the world. You know, they'll tell others, people start changing.
Yes. I mean, how often do we, on the reverse side of that, but it's the same process taking place, how often do we let in a friend and they're in a worried state or in a depressed state, and they go home feeling fine and we feel absolutely terrible?
Right.
Now that's the same process taking place, but it's taking place because they need energy and also because we are recognizing their negative problem rather than looking for a positive solution. But that's my point is that's exactly the same process in reverse.
Right.
What we have to do is to send out via that process a better situation for everyone and for ourselves, and to be that signpost, that beacon of light that people feel better from having connected with when they meet us. You know, it doesn't mean that we can't be the business person, or we can't be the doctor, or we can't be the lawyer. We can be all those things on the surface, but we have to be conscious all the time that we are giving out light, that we are spiritual beings, and that we can, if we so wish, improve people's lot. Everybody that we meet. Because everybody's suffering on this level. They're all suffering because we're not supposed to be here in this state,
no.
And we're all immersed in the field of human consciousness. So we have to take that knowledge of being a spiritual being out with us and bless and change everybody that we meet, not in a religious way. It's nothing to do with religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply a matter of helping to help them remember by creating around them the right atmosphere within which they can grow and remember.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly the day will come, they think, my goodness, I'm more than I appear to be. Or, my goodness, I do have power over this situation, and I know how to get out of it and how to change it.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes, you know, that expression, they say smiles are contagious. You know,
yes, absolutely.
Sometimes just smiling at someone, you know, giving somebody a compliment as you pass them on the street, you know, making a little conversation with an elder while you're online at the supermarket. I mean, this could change their whole day.
Yes. And showing an interest in them. Because one of the things that we don't tend to do on this level is to truly listen. We ask how someone is, and then we don't listen to the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're storing up and prepping our own answer to say, well, things are terrible for me. You know,
right.
And if you show interest in someone, you know, how long have you been doing this job, or you're looking great today, as you say, you see them blossom. You see their eyes light up. And you see literally light leap around them. And they are changed for the whole of that day simply because you've taken the time to show interest in them. And people are interesting. People have wonderful stories to tell. They're just waiting for us to show that interest. To, in effect, you know, you're putting water into the base of a plant pot and the plant responds and grows and blooms.
Right.
And we should take interest because the experiences of others are linked to us. They are part of our own experience and they are important. People are important. The people around us are important. And connecting to them is important. And if we do connect to them, the loneliness goes. And we find that along that harmony that we've created, other people gather around us and we become part of a harmonious community. That friendship you were talking about earlier,
right.
Which is
right.
So important.
Well, that's probably one of the reasons why so many of these support groups for so many different things are so successful, because people are actually there with other living, breathing people, you know, sharing similar experiences and helping each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have become very isolated. It's not right that we should sit in our own homes and everything is done digitally. We should quite literally reach out and connect to people and ask how they are and be interested in them. And there's a huge pleasure in that, a huge pleasure in that, because we are celebrating what we really are, a part of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something else that we should connect to during these holidays, to realize we're part of each other.
Right.
And we're all trying to remember who we are. No matter how badly we express that, we might express that through violence, we might express that through disharmony, but we are all trying to remember who we are. We're the privileged ones because we do remember who we are. We've got to share that knowledge.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, I want to thank you so much for all the information you shared with us, you know, through the years. I can't wait, you know, to continue this and for your new book.
Well, we'll be doing this next year, Maria. If we're still here, we will be doing this. I look forward to it.
Well, if you're still here, I'll still be here.
Yes, we'll still be here.
Well, thank
and
you.
And I'll be able to report on progress on the new book when we next get together.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Michael. Take good care.
Thank you, Maria. Take good care of yourself.
Thank
God bless.
You. Bye-bye. Bye. Michael Ray Kia. Check out his work, josephspeaks.com, if you resonate to it or vibrate to it. Or as we used to say in the 60s, are you feeling the vibe? Anyway, I'm so happy we had this show today. It's such a pleasure for me. Anyway, tomorrow I'll be back with news of Planet of the Apes. As usual, there's going to be plenty of it. And I am not just here as an observer, obviously. I'm here as a recorder, too. So again, thanks for supporting the show, and I'll see you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting The Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.